meeting for July 20th of the Metro Council to order. Note that we are all here. The first item on the agenda is citizen communications, and we have a citizen, Nanette Jones, who would like to address us. So if you'd like to come forward.
Absolutely.
Good day.
Mr. Hughes, am I the only citizen giving testimony today?
Did you give her your blue? Go ahead. Okay. Go ahead.
Okay. I'll proceed. Real quick, I have a few questions for the Metro Council. One is, where does Metro stand in protecting Oregon's waterways in the metro area against big oil development, considering considering what was just overturned, the moratorium against oil development in the metro area that Charlie Hales put in place. I'd like to know where you folks stand on that.
You know, that it's not an issue with which the council has ever opined officially. And so I suspect that we may have as many as 7 opinions about that.
Okay, because that's why I'm bringing it forward, because you are entrusted to protect our cold water fish. You're entrusted to protect the health and environmental habitat and livability of our area, of our metro area here. You're entrusted in protecting our waterways and entrusted in protecting that we have adequate cold water in these waterways to meet ESA standard for cold water fish. And I'd also like to know, what part of the transportation package are you going to make sure that culverts and water diversions across the metro area meet ESA fish passage criteria?
My guess is that we take that into account as the folks who design those design them.
Exactly. Well, I'd like to know if you guys are going to put pressure to make sure that they uphold their ESA commitment to protect the fish, cold water fish in our waterways, and to make sure that we have adequate fish passage. You know, millions of salmon, wild salmon, can die in one season, in one culvert or one water diversion, and according to the latest estimates of ODFW, we have over 27,000 blocked fish passages in this area alone. We're not even talking what's happening in Washington State. So this is a huge issue. I would really like to see, you know, some time and attention going forward with this, because this is a good investment. It's a measurable outcome, and it will actually provide protection for our cold water fish who need passage. Considering right now there's efforts to move forward with petroleum development in the area and the leasing of our public lands, I think it's really important that everybody knows where Metro stands on this.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, ma'am, would you like to? And if you would give us your name and address.
Yes. My name is Donna Cohen. Good afternoon. This relates to MTIP, actually. So in 2013, the Portland Bureau of Transportation applied through MTIP, won a transportation grant that would be funded under ODOT, STIP. The plan includes significant pedestrian crossing improvements along the Fessenden, St. Louis Corridor, and St. John's. The corridor has a high volume of traffic and is unusually wide, bisecting the community of St. John's of 15,000 people, splitting important destinations, library, pool, community center, park, downtown, to either side. A lack of safe crossings and a blind curve adds to the barrier, literally keeping people from crossing or crossing only with great inconvenience. No, Fessenden, St. Louis, which actually goes to the middle of St. John's. So, and I do have a copy of this for you. The area north of the corridor, away from downtown, has a lower income population, a higher percentage of seniors, children, and people with disabilities than St. John's as a whole, in fact, than the whole metro area. It is also ethnically and racially diverse, so neglecting this may raise questions of equity and environmental justice. The safety features were agreed upon during a 17-month public planning process from 2011 to 2012, which included stakeholder committee meetings with St. John's residents, including myself, freight industry, and PBOT representatives. The Phase 2 plan was well received by the community, and the improvements have been eagerly awaited. Last month, PBOT unilaterally and with no community input whatsoever decided to eliminate most of the pedestrian safety features. My question to Metro concerns whether PBOT has bypassed an amendment process necessary for making these changes. If an amendment process was necessary, a public involvement process would have accompanied that. I've been in contact with Metro and with ODOT, and I've received contradictory messages about the amendment process. Metro has told me that the amendment process with Metro is new and it doesn't apply to this grant, but ODOT tells me it does apply, and I suppose that's because the grant is alive right now, because it was in the funding cycle from 2015 to 2018. So, and I have a reference on the sheet, information about the amendment process, and from my reading, it looks like if funds were set aside of at least $1 million for pedestrian bicycle safety, then it fits under amendment process, and that would be true of us. So I'm basically looking to Metro to figure this out and to determine whether we should have had amendment process, because frankly what's happened here is absolutely outrageous. You know, 17 months you're involved in a public involvement process and then they throw it out the window. So that's my request. Thank you.
Yeah, we'll track that down and find out what involvement we can have. Thank you.
Do we have your contact information
yep.
on that?
We have been getting, and Ms. Cohen has been sharing some of that information with Ernie in our office, and he can help also make sure that those connections are made.
Okay. Good. Thank you. Seeing no further citizen communication, we'll move to presentations, and the first of those is to call on Grant Spickelmeyer and Heidi Rahm for a discussion about Elephant Land's visitor education outcomes.
Good afternoon, Council President Hughes, fellow Metro Councilors. I'm Heidi Rahm, the Director of the Oregon Zoo Bond Program, and with me today is Grant Spickelmeyer, who oversees all education programming at the zoo. As you recall, in 2008, the Portland metro area was asked to invest $125 million in the Oregon Zoo to enhance animal welfare, increase access to conservation education, and conserve water and energy. The community passed that measure in large part due to the promise of an expanded elephant habitat. For more than five decades, the Oregon Zoo has inspired generations of visitors while helping scientists and researchers make important breakthroughs, discoveries that have helped us better understand and protect elephants around the world. Our goal with Elephant Lands was to encourage activity for the elephants, promote a diverse range of natural behaviors, offer increased opportunities for choice and social interaction, and provide biologically meaningful challenges for them. We also wanted to equip our visitors with an understanding of elephant welfare and inspire them to take conservation action. Elephant Lands has been open since 2015, and it continues to rank as the top visitor experience at the zoo for our guests. While we get this great feedback from our community and we've received over a dozen significant awards for the project, we're committed to digging a little bit deeper and to evaluate the changes taking place. We do this with all of our bond-funded projects. We want to know how the habitat is supporting elephant health and welfare, and if we're achieving our mission of inspiring our community to create a better future for wildlife. We're currently in the analysis of a four-year study to scientifically assess the effectiveness of Elephant Lands for the elephants. Scientists have been collecting and evaluating physiological and behavior data, and we will have those results for you later this year. In addition to assessing the effectiveness of design features on the elephants, we also want to evaluate if and how we met our goal of equipping visitors with an understanding of elephant welfare and inspiring them to take conservation action. Grant is with me today to share the results of our evaluation with you.
Council President Hughes, councilors, as Heidi related, with all of our bond projects, the Oregon Zoo is committed to studying the conservation education impact of the visitor experience. I just want to thank you for giving me the opportunity to share the results from our summative evaluation of the interpretive impact of the new elephant lands habitat. In the interpretive design process, we identified several key goals that outline what we hope zoo visitors would know, feel, and do after visiting elephant lands. Elephant lands represents a radical transformation in how elephants are cared for and viewed at the zoo, and we knew that the visitor experience needed to be equally transformative. Our interpretive graphics and displays were designed not just to describe our elephants, but to help zoo visitors better understand the Oregon Zoo's deep commitment to the welfare of the elephants in our care. We also wanted visitors to feel a stronger connection to these elephants after their visit and to leave wanting to take action on their behalf. With these goals in mind, we then worked with our outside evaluation firm, headed by the former director of education from the Woodland Park Zoo in Seattle, Terry O'Connor, to create six guiding questions that we felt would help us determine whether we'd accomplished these goals. These questions, as you can see on the screen, include: what do visitors learn about elephant biology, behavior, and conservation? What do visitors learn about the Oregon Zoo's vision for elephant welfare, as demonstrated through the Elephant Lands exhibit? What do visitors learn about the shared history of humans and elephants around the world, and specifically here in Portland? What impact does a visitor have on visitor empathy? What impact does a visit have on visitor empathy, respect for elephants? What impact does a visit to elephant lands have on visitor support for the zoo? And what features of the interpretive package are most memorable and engaging for visitors? So Terry and her partners then designed a multimodal evaluation that included an on-ground survey administered to over 100 zoo visitors right after their visit to elephant lands, a timing and tracking study, which we sometimes call the stalking study, where observers watched visitors as they walked through elephant lands to see which aspects they spent the most time with and how long they stayed in the exhibit overall. Finally, we held a series of focus groups with staff, visitors, and volunteers to gain a more in-depth understanding of what people were actually getting out of their experience. This evaluation all took place in the fall of 2016, with some of the focus groups happening earlier this year. A full 98-page summative report was submitted to the zoo. I will not be going through that whole report today. I will just present some of the highlights, but I am happy to serve the full report to anybody who would like to see all of the results. So with the timing and tracking study, we demonstrated that elephant lands is a compelling habitat with a lot to explore, both for our elephants and for our visitors. The average visit time was more than 8 minutes. I actually can't tell you how long the average visit time is because we broke our instrument. Our instrument told our trackers to stop following a visitor after 8 minutes, and almost everyone stayed longer than 8 minutes. 8 minutes is an extremely long time to visit one animal exhibit at a zoo during a visit, and we thought it was kind of the limit of what they would do. They stayed much longer. So we definitely think that speaks to the compelling nature of the habitat and the herd that lives there. The timing and tracking study also helped us better understand which graphics and features were being used regularly by guests. The graphic used the most was our elephant identification panels, which you can see on the screen. This actually didn't surprise us because in pre-construction surveys during our front-end evaluation, the number one thing that was requested by visitors was better information about how to identify which elephants they were actually looking at. And so these graphics, which are in actually six locations around the habitat, help with that. Another graphic that received a lot of attention was the sound interactive in the North Meadow that allows visitors to hear different calls that elephants make and learn how elephants use infrasonic sounds, those sounds below human hearing levels, to communicate. Interestingly, this was a communication method which was first described by researchers working at the Oregon Zoo. So we thought that was a really compelling story to tell. Finally, the touchable cast of the bottom of Packy's foot was one of the most looked at panels. It describes the unique foot and leg anatomy of elephants, who are surprisingly quiet walkers for their size. A panel immediately adjacent describes how Elephant Lands uses deep sand and varied terrain to keep their feet and legs healthy. So the survey we administered also gave us a lot of valuable information on the experience visitors were having. To start with, 85% of survey respondents rated their experience very good or excellent, and we had no poor ratings. One of the strongest indicators that visitors felt that the zoo had dramatically improved the habitat was shown in the response to the phrase, "Oregon zoo elephants have a good quality of life." Prior to construction of the new habitat, only 64% of visitors agreed with this phrase. After construction, 91% of visitors responded agreeing. The perception of improved elephant welfare comes out of specific observations of how the new habitat has given the elephants more choices, greater space, and an increased ability for elephants to interact with each other. These all came out in both the survey and the focus group. Now, along with feeling like the habitat was well designed for elephants, visitors did feel a stronger connection with the elephants themselves in the habitat. Oregon loves our elephant herd, and Lily and Packy were both listed in the top 10 most memorable parts of their visit. Survey respondents are proud of what the Oregon Zoo is doing, not only to support the elephants at the zoo, but also the work being done in the wild to support Asian elephant conservation. In particular, they mentioned hearing about our efforts to combat ongoing wildlife trafficking in animal parts, such as elephant ivory. Now, while many of our visitors had heard about the struggles being faced by particularly African elephants with the ivory trade, we did find that for many of them, the impacts of palm oil production on elephants was something they hadn't heard before they visited. In particular, the story of Chendra, the Bornean forest elephant that was found wounded and alone in a palm oil plantation, is shared in a compelling video in the back of Forest Hall and is making a compelling story about the impacts of palm oil production. So Chendra's story and the rest of the Elephant Lands experience leave our visitors wanting to take action. Many visitors reported that they were more likely to advocate for sustainable palm oil production and to donate money to help the Oregon Zoo better support elephant conservation in the wild. Finally, I'd like to read one quote that I think sums up a lot of what we learned through this evaluation, provided by a zoo visitor during one of our focus groups. For a long time, I was anti-zoo, but coming up here and seeing how wonderfully the animals are treated in the open spaces and the realization that most people are not blessed to travel globally, and how else can children learn about animals up close and personal? I think Elephant Lands solidified in my mind that this is really okay. This exhibit helped me see the value of zoos. So we at the Oregon Zoo know that our community loves Rose, Lily, Chendra, Sam, and Shine, and wants to make sure they have the best possible habitat to live in. We also know that we have an obligation to use the Elephant Lands habitat to educate visitors about the needs of wild elephant populations and to inspire conservation action. We believe that Elephant Lands accomplishes all of this, and this evaluation gives us confidence that the voters of the region made the right decision to invest in its construction. Thank you.
So, are there questions?
Comments.
There we go. Councillor Collette.
Well, not a question so much as a comment, because the thing that jumped out at me first was 8 minutes. I mean, yeah. I can hardly leave. When I go to the zoo with friends, they're all ready to walk on, and I'm still staring at the elephants for, I could easily stay there an hour. That's not at all surprising. So I can understand why the tracking device failed after 8 minutes to be able to track people, because I think it really is a tremendous place, and to be able to get up close and experience the elephants is phenomenal. And I really appreciate this work because, again, people sometimes wrongly identify the zoo as entertainment. And it's really, at least from our perspective and those of folks who work at the zoo, it's about education and care. And this study tells us that that's working, and that's in some ways the best feedback we could get is people are learning about what's important about elephants and why we care about them. So thank you. And thanks for this work. It's terrific.
Councillor Craddock.
Thank you. I, of course, just want to echo what Councillor Collette said. This is really uplifting information, and it's really demonstrating that we're on target on the direction that we're going, and that visitors that attend the Oregon Zoo really are value this new facility and the role that the Oregon Zoo plays in both education and conservation. So thank you for putting this research together, preparing for it. I think you came up with your principles early on, am I correct, before the facility was actually built?
Yes.
And so that guided how the construction of the facility and the interpretive experience that the visitors have. So this is the after piece.
The standard process we use with these new habitats is we do some front-end evaluation to collect feedback from the community about what they're interested in learning about and what they'd like to see in the new habitat. Then we develop our interpretive goals as a team, and then we start the process working with the interpretive designer, and we usually do some formative evaluation halfway through just to make sure we're on track, and then we do the summative at the end. So.
So I just have a question to follow up. If that's okay. So I as the facility ages, gets older, how do you see what the process would be to continue to evaluate the value of that of the interpretives? Do you see over time there might be changes that occur as the public's interest in values change?
One of the struggles, especially with such a timely issue like conservation. We're learning new things all the time, right? When we opened this exhibit, we didn't have an endowment for elephant conservation like we do now, and so we didn't talk about it in the graphics that we developed. So we already are having conversations about how can we inform people that donation device is going towards an endowment for elephant conservation. So we do have to constantly be reevaluating and looking for new ways to update the signs and keep that, especially the conservation information, fresh.
And then just one other question. As we continue to upgrade or update the Oregon Zoo, of course you now have the new education facility. Will you be coming to us with that kind of similar information about what we expected and what we learned from public feedback? I assume the education facility, you have some guiding principles that guided your plans for the facility, and I assume you'll measure that at a later time.
Yeah, we're committed to continuing to do that, and we'll most likely be launching, I think the Education Center evaluation will probably be this fall. We're doing a lot of learning right now. It just opened 3 months ago, and there's a lot of learning going on a daily basis as we figure out all the nooks and crannies of that space. But we'll do a more formal evaluation in the fall.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
I would think that one of the changes that you're going to make in the future evaluation process is to get longer clocks.
we missed the mark on that one. And actually, anecdotally, we had I know a couple of the people they were watching stayed for over 30 minutes, especially once they're in Forest Hall, and if the elephants are in Forest Hall engaging with. A boomer ball or different enrichment items in there, you can just stay there all day.
So. Yeah. I followed them around one time, just in and out of the hall and over. I mean, it's just a riot to see their behavior. It's phenomenal.
Yeah. It might be good to check with legal staff to make sure we're okay on the stalking laws. But, the other thing is I am reminded almost daily on Facebook, actually, by my friends down in Borneo, who are responsible for running the conservation program in Borneo that is in the same vicinity where Chandra came out of her circumstances, to the value that they place on the relationship with the Oregon Zoo and other zoos that they connect with in the United States as a way of educating our public about their problem in what becomes our problem collectively worldwide. And I think Dr. Moore gave the statistic one time, if I remember correctly, that approximately 35,000 African elephants are killed each year for their ivory, and there are about 35,000 Asian elephants left in the world. And so the problem of maintaining that species is particularly dire right now. And I think if you did the numbers on the Borneo forest elephants, you'd find that it's even more dire there. And so I'm glad that we're playing the role that we can play in terms of educating people about the importance of making good choices about palm oil. Just making choices about palm oil is remarkable for most of us, I think. But that really does have an impact on the future success of those folks in the range countries trying to preserve the life of the Asian elephants that exist. So thank you guys for the work you do up there.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, and thanks for the report. Next item on the agenda is the consent agenda. We have two items on the consent agenda, the minutes for the June 29th council meeting and resolution number 17-4811. Could I have a motion, please?
Move approval.
Second.
Moved and seconded. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Motion carried. Item number five are resolutions. The first is resolution number 174821. At this time, I will recess the meeting of the Metro Council. I recess gavel. And convene the Metro Council, the Metro Contract Review Board, and call on Ms. Papsdorf to read the resolution number 17-4821 by title only.
Resolution number 17-4821, for the purpose of authorizing an exemption from competitive bidding and authorizing procurement by request for proposals for food waste processing services.
And we have a staff report.
Yes, hello.
Hi.
Good afternoon, Council President Hughes and Metro Council. I'm Tracy Segal, Senior Procurement Analyst, representing Procurement Services. With me, I have Lisa High, Principal Solid Waste Planner, who's the project manager on this project. So the background for this resolution, Metro is responsible for solid waste planning within the region through implementation of the Regional Solid Waste Plan and other policies, programs, and actions. City and county governments are primarily responsible for development and implementation of local collection programs with collection services provided by franchise permitted or otherwise regulated privately owned haulers. The Regional Solid Waste Management Plan identified commercial food waste as a priority area of focus, reflecting the significant quantity of this material remaining in the region's waste stream and the potential environmental and economic benefits of recovery. Over 206,000 tons of food waste was sent to landfills from the region in 2010, which represents 18% of the disposed waste stream. Metro estimates that 55% of disposed food waste is generated by the commercial sector and 45% by the residential sector. The goal of collecting food waste is to capture the environmental and economic benefits of turning that material into useful products, returning nutrients to soil, creating energy, supporting agriculture, and reducing the negative environmental impacts associated with disposal. Annually, 28,000 tons of commercially derived source-separated food waste is currently delivered to private and public transfer stations. Metro seeks processing capacity to recover 50,000 tons per year of food waste from the commercial sector, with a preference for a facility located in or closely proximate to the Portland metro area. Metro wishes to ensure that the region manages food waste in a manner that protects human health and the environment while protecting the good value for the public's money. Increasing the recovery of food waste reflects Metro's commitment to the highest and best use of materials by getting both nutrient and energy value from food waste while remaining adaptive and responsive in managing materials now and in the future and making services available to all types of customers. On January 22, 2016, Metro issued a request for qualifications in order to pre-qualify firms to provide food waste processing services in the region. 13 firms responded, and on April 7th, of 2016, Metro pre-qualified 9 of those firms. On May 25, 2017, Metro issued a request for proposals for food waste processing services to secure capacity to process 50,000 tons per year of source-separated commercial food waste in an economically and environmentally sound manner to produce energy and/or agricultural supplements. Recognizing the unique aspects of this project, staff determined that the public would benefit if respondents could propose the type of financing arrangement that they felt would best meet Metro's project objectives including a public-private partnership, private-only financing, or public-only financing. Because of the opportunity for financing flexibility in this RFP, the procurement may result in the award of a contract that includes a publicly financed construction project. In order to be prepared for this possible outcome, staff is requesting an alternative to the request for bid requirement for publicly financed construction projects. The resolution and findings from today describe the specialized nature of this technical and unique project, and based on these findings, staff believes that the value and experience-based selection process, or RFP process, is more appropriate than a traditional RFB competitive bid, which looks solely at lowest bid price and will result in a more beneficial result for Metro and the region. Our recommended action is to approve an exemption from the competitive bidding, authorizing Metro to procure the food waste processing services contract through an RFP if it becomes necessary.
Are there questions for staff before I open the public hearing? Okay, That's what that little red light means, isn't it? Okay.
I just want to clarify and make sure I understand this. So we've issued an RFP back in May.
RFQ?
We did an RFQ. There were pre-qualified firms, and then we did an RFP in May. Sorry.
We're doing an RFP.
Oh, sorry, you got it right.
No, we're not doing an RFP. So if I could start over.
All right.
Metro issued a request for proposals back in May, and that lists out all kinds of details that are not in our packet today. But given, and that RFP allowed for the possibility of a proposer to propose a fully private facility, a fully publicly owned facility, or a mixture of the two. And it's my understanding that this resolution is following up on the technical needs of that, because without this item today, we would be required to do an RFB, request for bid, financing-wise. But we need to follow up with this legislation today in order to be able to fully evaluate and participate in a proposal that is still forthcoming that would involve public financing.
It's our intention to be proactive regarding the procurement method that we would use if the proposals result in an award to a firm who prefers to have a publicly constructed facility. So this is a request to be proactive and to, before we see the results of that RFP process, which we have not yet received, allow for this possibility in the case that it is our desired outcome.
So this legislation today does not change that RFP?
No, it just provides for flexibility in the future so that when we do receive those proposals, we can choose the option that best suits Metro.
Thank you.
Thanks. Thank you, Councilor. Councilor Craddock.
Thank you. This is a question that I should have asked prior to now. Under what circumstances would a company come forward and ask for public financing? Can you give us an example of how that would work?
Privately
run, but it would be publicly built.
It could be a variety of different things. It could be publicly financed and privately run through a contract. Similar. It could be, that the builder builds and walks away, and then the public, us, Metro, decides how we want to, do that. Do we want to have our own people in there, or do we want to do what we have normally do? I mean, we have kind of two models, right? We have the HHW, which has our staff. We also have Scale House, and then so it really depends, I would think, but it could be a variety.
And this would be a proposal that would come from an outside party as opposed to us making our own proposal.
That's correct, okay. Yes.
But a public financing implies public ownership.
It does.
We're not assuming that there would be a circumstance where a private party would say, build this for us and give it to us. They would say, build it for us and then we'll run it for you, but it'll be you'll own it.
Yes, I mean, we'll build it for you.
Yeah.
And then I would assume, now I'm not, I would assume that we would do a competitive process for running it as well.
And theoretically, we would have a choice between a variety of ways of doing it. We're simply, the purpose of this is to allow us any one of a number of choices.
That's interesting. It gives us a lot of flexibility.
Right. Okay. Other questions? Allison is on my list.
Council President Hughes, members of council, just to follow up on that a little bit, we could, as the presenters have said, this gives us flexibility. What is likely is that it'll be a private ownership proposed private facility, but because it's possible that it may make more sense given our requirements that there are some aspects of some public participation, this gives us the ability to enter into that contract without having to come back to council in the middle of the contract review process to ask for this approval. It's similar to what we did with the headquarters hotel. We had the same exemption from competitive bidding before we awarded the contract, and that was to allow for a lot of flexibility. And you'll remember in that one, we have private ownership, but there is some public contribution.
Thank you, Councilor. Okay, anyone else wish to have any questions? Okay, then let me open the public hearing. I'm going to open the public hearing on resolution number 17-4821. If there's anyone who wishes to speak in support, come forward. If there's anyone who wishes to speak either in support or in opposition, come forward. And seeing no one coming forward, I'm going to close the public hearing. And we will now call for a motion.
Move approval.
Second?
Second.
Moved and seconded. Yes.
If I could. As the questions of my colleagues have already illustrated, there are a lot of moving parts in the food scrap decision making, how we process food waste. Variables like, obviously, what's the cost per ton of processing? What's the likely value of byproducts, including energy? What location locations are being proposed, and how well served are they potentially by transfer facilities that would make collection more feasible? The types of food waste processing technology. We've got some different ideas about that. And finally, facility construction and how we would approach that and whether public funding would be necessary. With all those moving parts, I think it's highly desirable that we provide this kind of flexibility to pick the best possible solution for the financing component of this very complex process and make sure that that's not a holdup at the end or halfway through. So I'm very supportive of this procedure.
Thank you, Councillor. Other comments? Okay, let's do a roll call.
Councillor Stacey?
Aye.
Councillor Chase?
Aye.
Councillor Harrington?
Yes.
Councillor Craddock?
Aye.
Councillor Collette?
Yes.
Councillor Dirksen?
Yes.
Council President Hughes?
Aye.
Motion carries. Item 5.2 is resolution number 17-4815. Ms. Papsdorf, could we read that by title only?
Resolution number 17-4815, for the purpose of approving the amended and restated intergovernmental agreement among the State of Oregon, Metro, Clackamas County, and Oregon City for the Willamette Falls Legacy Project.
Could I have a motion, please?
Move approval.
And a second.
Second.
Moved and seconded. Mr. Moore. Staff report, please.
Good afternoon, Council President Hughes, Metro Councilors. This amended and restated intergovernmental agreement continues the partnership established in March 2016 with Oregon City, Clackamas County, and the State of Oregon. It's an update providing direction for delivery of the first phase of the Willamette Falls Legacy Project Riverwalk. The project budget will continue to follow a two-year cycle, allowing each agency to appropriate funds according to their own processes and procedures. Metro remains on point to deliver on commitments for the state funding and for the natural areas bond funding, and also continues to hold the easement for the Riverwalk. The proposed IGA will formally continue the partners group as the advisory body for the Legacy Project and retain the representation from each partner agency. The next item that the council will hear regarding this project would be a parks master plan that addresses the overall Riverwalk project. We expect that to come to you this fall. Staff recommends the council approve resolution number 174815, and I would be happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Any questions for Brian? Nobody's lighting up. What?
I don't have it. Okay. Oh, there it is.
There you go.
I wanted to, excuse me, I was looking at the staff report and I couldn't find the button to push to ask to speak. The question I have is a statement that is in here in the staff report regarding the Rediscover the Falls group, the fundraising nonprofit arm of the consortium. And the expectation is they'll raise $50 million, but it's not clear on what role those funds will play. It just says they'll be raising additional funds that may be able to support the project. So is there a decision or a target on how these funds will be used? Do we have an expectation for the role that these funds will play?
Yes, we do. So the budget currently has about $5.6 million identified for capital investment in the Riverwalk directly. The Friends Group elected to set a higher bar than that $5.8 million fundraising goal for themselves, and identification of exactly how that those funds are used has yet to be determined, because the 5.8 covers the initial contemplated capital investment of the Riverwalk.
Thank you. And you're confident that the fundraising will be easy and successful?
I'm confident that the fundraising will be successful. nothing is easy, but we are all working very hard to make sure it happens.
Thank you.
Other questions for Brian? Okay, thank you, Brian. Any discussion? Councillor Harrington.
I just want to say that this continues to be a very exciting project with a lot of hope, one of those once-in-a-lifetime opportunity projects, and I really appreciate the work of Councillor Craddock and, Councillor Collette and all the other parties involved here at Metro and in the other jurisdictions in the Friends Group for trying to make this dream become a reality. I know there's still a long way to go, but there's a lot of effort that goes into the information and the details that's represented in each of these exhibits. And I don't have to be there to make it happen, but I get to enjoy the fruits of all of your labor, which is why at each step I'm trying to make sure I say thank you along the way, because I appreciate the effort that's going into that.
You're not gone yet, Councillor.
I'm not going anywhere, but I'm thankful along this journey that so many of you are putting in tremendous effort.
Thank you.
Councillor Collette.
Well, I also just really appreciate all the work you've done, Brian, and the rest of the staff to get us to this point, because this is really, up to now, it's been planning, design, planning. With this agreement, we can start moving forward on permitting, seeing some change actually happening on the ground, And the fact that all of the partners are still together in agreement is a really big plus. This is, it has been beyond herding cats. I mean, it's just been amazingly vibrant process. So it is really to the credit of all the staff who've been leading the project this far that we have come this far and are ready to take the next step to move into implementation. So thank you. Thank you guys too.
Thank you.
Thank you, Brian. I would throw in with that, this has been a project where we have kept our nose to the grindstone and our eye on the ball, dodging kayaks and other moving vehicles. And so this has been, it's been great to get it to this point in time where we actually will begin to see change taking place in the facilities. So I'm really excited as we move forward on this. And if there is nobody else, we could have a roll call. Ma'am?
Can I
call Sure.
Did you just call your friends?
Come on up to the mic.
No.
Can
you define who these friend groups are?
The friend group that has been formed is called
Rediscover the Falls.
Rediscover the Falls.
And it's a nonprofit group that was formed last year, 2 years ago, to be the private side support to raise money from people who just want to give money to a good project. So that's the nonprofit group, and you could visit the website, which is rediscoverthefalls.com. It's changed, but you will be directed right to there.
Okay, and then they say there'll be work with tribal partners.
Can you
define what tribal partners those will be?
Well, all of the tribes in the area who have an interest in it have been invited to participate in the process, and we're working with them in an ongoing way.
Is that Crickfic?
No, not through. I mean, not specifically through Crickfic. That's just one of the tribal organizations.
Are they involved?
They are involved, but the Grand Ronde tribe, the Warm Springs, the
Siletz,
Umatilla, and the Yakima are all involved, principally involved, because this is one of their primary areas.
That's great. I would like to see more involvement from them, considering Crickfic is fully funded by the Bonneville Power Administration. So they are very they're funded by the Bonneville Power Administration, and we're working with PGE, and we have a sea lion trap right down on that river, which I think is absolutely counterproductive for our wildlife watching, for our promotion of tourism. Are we going to have people walking on this new river walk that the public pays for and Crickfic's out there shooting our sea lions?
But
Metro needs to be aware of what is planned.
This is not this forum is actually for council communications.
We're talking about a further resolution that's going to...
Sorry, ma'am.
No, ma'am.
Excuse me.
We've already gone past the public open hearing on this, and we're actually...
I want to define who the partners are, because we're going to be investing, but there's no owner of this property yet. So how do we know that the owner of the property will meet the...
There is an owner.
Okay.
If you go to the website, you'll get information.
Who is the owner?
You should go to the website.
You should go to the website because all of that
information. Tell me who the owner is.
The owner of the property is George Heidgerken, his name. It's Falls Legacy LLC. But we are the public partners. A number of government agencies are working together.
So let me suggest that, Brian. Meet with Ms. Jones to get the information, at least the questions and the information. So
right. It is on the public record. We've had several public hearings.
Is there anything that's going to commit this new person to go forward with the four core values?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. And Brian would be happy to sit down and talk to you about where the project is.
That's Brian.
Oh, okay. Yeah, okay. So thank you very much, though, for your concern. With that, we could have a roll call.
Councillor Chase?
Aye.
Councillor Harrington?
Yes.
Councillor Craddock?
Aye.
Councillor Collette?
Yes.
Councillor Dirksen?
Yes.
Councillor Stacey?
Aye.
Council President Hughes?
Aye.
Motion carries. Item 5, Councillor...
Whoever she is.
Councillor Bennett over here.
No. Never.
Operating.
No. I have all parks all the time today. First, I need to let you know about a little fire we had today on one of our properties. Second, I want to recognize a staff person who retired on Monday. And last, but I want to make sure you know about an event we're going to have and ask for your help promoting it. So I think some of you may know that we had a small wildfire at Kanema Bluff Natural Area this morning. It was actually discovered by one of our staff as they were driving into work very early in the morning, and in fact the email was really funny where they said, I hope that's not Kanema, and then they showed up, and of course it was Kanema. Clackamas County Fire District Number 1 responded, and we're grateful to them for putting out the fire by 8 o'clock in the morning. They had it controlled and put out later in the morning. The news about the fire is actually somewhat good in terms of the result was much better than it would have been had it not been for the restoration work that was done as part of the levee work. And so I, first of all, just wanted to thank you, but second, let you know that removing some of the most flammable invasive plants, managing our fuel loads, making sure we dealt with water quality on that property actually meant that we were able to ensure that the property, that the fire didn't spread beyond the boundaries of the property. And then what the staff tells me is fire today burned at relatively low intensity, remained close to the ground. It did not encounter ladder fuels and kept it out of the canopy of the trees on site, which kept it from spreading. We will also let you know later that we will be doing some science monitoring to see if actually the fire was good for the property, because it might have been. There were news stories on KATU and KPTV, and I imagine the other TV stations will pick it up. So this is the first good news, bad news story I've had to do this week. So anyway, all right. And then interestingly enough, on Monday, a person who once said it was the region's manifest destiny to have there be a natural area on Kanema Bluff retired from 14 years of service. I want to thank Barb Edwardson for 14 years of service in the natural areas acquisition program. She was pivotal in many of the key properties that we acquired. She said when she left, her two favorites were the Farmington Paddle Launch property and River Island, the 240-acre natural area. But I most remember her telling me that Kanema Bluff was the region's manifest destiny. So if you see Barb around, and you might see her if you go to the Oregon coast because she owns a home in Nehalem and is going to move there, please thank her for her service. And then last but not least, I hope you saw in the hallway, and I hope you promote that we are going to have a new kind of event at Glen De Vere Golf Course, a star party this Saturday from 8:30 to 10:30. The Rose City astronomers are going to bring telescopes and share knowledge of what stars we're all looking at in the sky. And so it's a great opportunity to talk to people who actually know what those things are. And so I hope you'll promote it on your social networks. And also, if you're interested, please register. And I'm also told that if in the unlikely event of clouds, we will reschedule that event. That's all I have. It is this Saturday, so that would be the 22nd. 8:30 to 10:30. That's all I have, unless you have questions.
Questions for Martha? Okay, Council Communications. Oop, there we go. Shirley?
Thank you. Last night, staff and I joined them. We hosted an open house at the Novus Academy, which is a private school, charter school that's on 182nd and Stark in Gresham. And the focus of that with the open house was regarding the plans that staff are creating and developing regarding the Gabbert Butte in Gresham. Metro, as you already know, owns multiple acres of land on a variety of the boring lava domes that are in East Multnomah County. Of course, Mount Talbert, there's Scouters Mountain, That might be the two that I'm thinking of in East, right now that we've already developed. But we now are in the plans of looking at what we'll do regarding Gabbert Butte. Gabbert Butte is part of the Gresham Butte, which is in the city limits of Gresham. This is an area that has had a trail system up there for many years. It's man-made. It's people are just choosing to walk up there and have slowly created this trail. And so the plans are, is how do we improve that trail system, make it safer, make it more ecologically sound, and connecting neighborhoods together. So there were about 50 people there last night. It was a really good turnout. People were very excited. It was really actually very refreshing. And to be able to move forward with this master planning process to plan what will, how, and also create access to this area. The area is pretty much fully surrounded by development. So it's how do we gain access and so the public can get into that facility. So I look forward to the plan moves forward. I'm sure they'll be bringing that presentation to us when they get it developed.
Councilor Dirksen.
Thank you. This morning we had our monthly JPAC meeting, and at that meeting we approved the CMAQ letter with a one small addition, a revision recommended by Councilor Stacy with regard to the bridge funding, specifying some amounts that had been recommended also by TriMet. Also saw a letter that TriMet themselves is also submitting to the Transportation Commission, and that meeting is going on as we speak, and hopefully we'll get a hear back on what discussion they're having and what decisions they may have made about the CMAQ formula. We also reviewed a letter with regarding the federal freight designation and with a recommendation of an addition in the Portland area, which would be the intersection of Highway 224 and 99E, that would make it that area qualify for federal improvement funds. And then we had an overview of the state transportation package and a pretty robust discussion afterwards, a lot of questions, some of which we could answer and some which we cannot yet. But we acknowledge that while the additional funding is going to be helpful, there's still a lot of work to be done, and we need to determine what we can do here regionally to provide additional funding to accomplish the things that we need to accomplish as well.
Councilor Chase.
Well, just a quick update. As my colleagues here are certainly aware, Metro has been instrumental in establishing a brownfields coalition, much in part with the leadership of President Hughes, to identify what are the strategies that we can put in place to really tackle some of these many, many hundreds of brownfields around our region and make those useful, productive properties. So a number of pieces of legislation have been passed to help create tools to do that. One of those is allowing local jurisdictions to put incentives in place that will help, tax incentives in place that will help move those properties along and help pay for the cleanup. Portland City Council yesterday considered and voted for moving forward with a strategy to do just that. And so I testified in favor of that brownfield work, and so just wanted to give you that update. I believe the timeline's about 6 months where they will come back and really look at a proposal in terms of what incentives they might offer.
Thank you. Questions? Anyone else? Okay, we are adjourned, and our next meeting is scheduled for Thursday, July 27th at 2 p.m. at the Metro Regional Center Council Chambers.